been forecasted in very significant because it brings out the principle of God incarnating as human being. We know that the divine incarnating or appearing in the form of a human without any change. It is like wood appearing in the form of a chair. The wood remains wood, not that it gets converted into wax for the chair. Why is remaining wood? It appears in the form of a chair. So, this divine, without any change in the divinity, it manifests as a human being, and the purpose is to teach the humanity the goal and the way. This knowledge is a knowledge that brings a complete illumination, total satisfaction, and that is the goal of life. So, we see that this process is being described, and since this is a completely different path that ordinary person is accustomed to walk on, there come many doubts that can this be possible. It makes sense, but why I am not hearing it from many other wise people in the world? There are many scientists, why are they not speaking about it? There have been many other important figures in society, why did they not tell about it? So, all such doubts do come, because this is just as knowledge that comes from the divine source. Human beings, there are great people in various names. Some people can be great poets. There may be people who are very intelligent and capable in various other fields. Like some can be wonderful musicians. Somebody can be very strong politician. Somebody can be wonderful engineers. They are great in their ways, no doubt. They have notable achievements. But this is just a part that is a completely different one. Commonly, people seek satisfaction of the sense organs, enjoyment of the senses, as we say. That the eyes want to enjoy the form, and the ears want to enjoy the sweet sounds, the tongue wants to enjoy the delicacies. And similarly, we see that is where a person gets dragged. And by habit and by looking at other people in the world, seems that that is the best way to go about. And the more one gets into that, there is frustration felt. We often see that what I have been seeking is not what I am getting in this. But yet, the failure is attributed to not that my path is wrong, but maybe I am not applying it good enough. And so, you seek things again, more and more of the same level, seeing that or thinking that, and maybe that will bring satisfaction. Like a man may not get satisfaction running after one woman or being with one woman, and feels that maybe that was not the right one for me, let me run after another, that may bring some more satisfaction in life. One doesn't realize that the satisfaction doesn't come by that at all, by running after any such object. The problem is more fundamental. It is not that there is anything wrong with that particular object or that particular search alone. But the problem is that anything that we are seeking outside is going in the opposite direction. The direction becomes completely wrong there when we try to search this satisfaction in anything outside, any achievement outside, then what happens? The source of all the satisfaction is within ourselves. The self is the source of joy. Self is the source of immortality. And that is what we really are seeking. But we feel that it is there, out there, and we rush there, and we don't find it. We feel that maybe not that point, but some other point. So, going out like that, we spend our lives. Lord, therefore, tells that, no, that is not the way. You have to bring about a categorical directional change in your life. It is not a matter of just refixing that let me do some charitable work in addition to what I am doing. That is good, but that is not going to bring a complete change in one's life. One may think that, yes, I may do about 10 minutes of yoga and meditation and that will fix the problem. That won't do. It is good that you spend some time in meditation, but what is required is that change in direction. And even though one understands it, the problem comes that, well, should I need to do all that? Is it necessary? And maybe, who knows, that the person telling me could be just wrong. Although it looks logical, but things which appear logical are not always correct. And logic is a tricky thing, that the lawyers have the power to convince you of all the opposite arguments. That story of the lawyer, very famous, that he forgot who his client is, so started doing all the opposite arguments. And he was drunk, so he didn't realize, you know, that he is doing all the opposite arguments. And then the client was pulling at his coat all the time, hey, hey, hey. And ultimately when the spell of the drink got reduced, and then he would, what? You are doing all the opposite arguments. Is it so? It doesn't matter. And then he switched the gears. Like the car, you know, it is going to go forward, backward. So he switched the gears and said, what I have been telling till now was what our opponents can say. They can say this and this much only, nothing more than that. Now I will show how they are all wrong. And then he proved that how all those were wrong. So logic is like that. It is, you can buy forceful arguments, one can make others accept, at least to that point, that yes, it seems possible. like those in college, our one lady used to sell certain those. She used to have some these two types of blueberries or something, and that Indian fruit, you know, small gooseberries and some other berries were there. So we used to make sometimes fun of her that, well, give me that 1 rupee worth of those berries. And then after taking, we would say, okay, now I want to exchange it for the other one. Take these and give me that. And then if we start going without paying money, hey, if you say, give my 1 rupee, where is my 1 rupee? What do you mean, what 1 rupee for? Those berries, that is, those gooseberries you took. Well, we return the blueberries, and for the blueberries we are taking these gooseberries. Okay, then pay for the blueberries. We are not taking blueberries, why should we pay for blueberries? So, she, of course, she wouldn't give us. I want my 1 rupee. It is. Logic is like that. Logic has. So, and the spiritual aspirant, even after conviction, feels that maybe the teachers are wrong. Maybe what I have been reading has some flaw. Because why all these 10 people in the world, they are not telling me to do that? Where all my forefathers wrong? No, they are, nobody is wrong as such. But they are not experts in that field. Therefore God, in this chapter, that is the great important point of this chapter, Lord says, I am telling you, the Lord is telling you these things. There is no possibility of mistake here. The truths are to be tested according to, as we say in Vedanta, what the scripture says, Shruti. The Shruti, then it is to be understood according to reason, rationality. And just don't accept something because it is written in some book. If it is written in some book, yes, it is. Of course, those people were not dishonest. So certainly there is the possibility of truth in it. But you have to understand those things rationally. So reason is important. So we say Shruti Yukti, that let the light of reason run over it. And then try to implement it in your life, and you will realize it. You will experience it. You will know them to be true for yourself. So all this requires what we were discussing last time, a spirit of adventure, a spirit where we want to taste this truth for ourselves. We need to take a leap. In short, we need to take a leap. This is the adventure that Lord says, therefore you have to give up all doubt. This process of purifying oneself gradually so that one can see the truth has been called the yajna, the sacrifice, where you go on graduating into higher and higher levels. It is true that the illumination doesn't just drop automatically and on one fine morning suddenly, not like that. It is a process that you transform your life accordingly and slowly, little by little at a time. And little is not the key word in it. You can bring about big transformation also if you can. But what is meant is that there are grades. Gradually, the transformation takes place in life. But you have to be up and doing. You have to stick to it. The doubts can keep on assailing. And that is why Lord speaks here at the last verse that we were discussing, that the 42nd verse of the this fourth chapter. Forty-eighth verse of the fourth chapter, that Ajnasya Akrata Dhanasya Sanjaya Atma Vinashati Nayam Loko Dinaparo Nasukham Sanjaya Atmanaha. He who is ignorant, wanting in faith, and of a doubting mind is ruined. For the doubting man there is neither this nor the other world, nor happiness. And we saw that doubt is not bad. In fact, it is an important thing to have doubt to know the truth. One should have doubt, but what is referred to here is not that you get a doubt and you want to resolve it. No, this person is of the doubting nature, all the time only doubting, doing nothing. The example given is just as one keeps on reading, this person keeps on just doubting and therefore cannot proceed at all. That is what is told here. Don't be a samshaya atma. It is difficult to again translate this word. It is atma. The soul of this person is made of doubt. The doubt is the soul of this person. So always only doubt. And this becomes a big problem. That you think that yes, it is the Lord is telling so much be true. And these people have not come for any selfish motive. No. And if you see the lives of these great people, they had sympathy for everyone in the world. Rama, Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, and such great personages, what do you find in their life? And they are not thieves and rogues. And we doubt what these people say, but accept whatever the TV ads tell us without any question. No? Yes, I heard it on TV. I read it in newspaper. Perfect truth. That is, you never raise doubt about it. I read it in the newspaper. I read it in Google. That is good. It is in the Wikipedia, in the Google. So that is the scriptural truth. But what this God incarnation, what Sri Ramakrishna is saying? Maybe who knows, he might not be knowing. He might not be knowing. And these people know. This person has nothing to gain by telling you the lies. So, be convinced of this. And after being convinced, you proceed with dogged determination. Once you get the your doubt clarified, now don't look back. Now proceed with determination. This requires determination because there is this adventure. Adventure means the heart starts shaking, when something you are doing that is a bit risky. Then you feel, what will happen? You consider it 10 times. Although you like to do it, yet you have fears associated with it. Well, you have to know that this life otherwise also is uncertain. Any single little thing can change the whole spectrum of life. So, let us make use of it for some great purpose in life. So, it is told that don't harbor doubt. That is the big enemy in life. The next verse says, It's a big, big energy. Let us look upon this God as a friend, but as a big enemy. You had doubt, you resolved them. Now be convinced of this truth and march forward. That is what is required. That take up this challenge. This taking up the challenge is necessary. That yes, I want to do it. And let me see the end of it. That spirit of that determination and adventure has to be very strong. That yes, let me try it out. That people feel that, well, this religion and all, no. I tried meditating for 3 days. In 3 days you meditated, this fellow what meditated on, who knows? And wants to say that it is all false because in 3 days we didn't get anything. It is, Sri Ramakrishna always used to tell that without a very strong discipline, determination, one doesn't achieve much. The doubts otherwise, well, my teacher might be cheating me, or the scriptures may not have proper knowledge. After all, Bhagavad Gita, old scripture, they didn't understand genetic engineering and all that at that time. So now we know that it is all dependent on the gene. And so unless you have a God gene, you can't become religious. So it is, Lord Krishna never studied genetic engineering, so he didn't know. So we get all such doubts again, and that unsettles our determination. So therefore, this verse has great psychological importance. Many times people studying Bhagavad Gita in just an academic way wonder that why this looks like not important, why this verse, why Lord was describing various types of yajnas, various types of sacrifices, why this verse suddenly comes about doubt and other impediments, because these things come in the mind while you are walking on the path, these psychological hurdles, and we all experience them, that because the path is uphill, it is not easy to go on that. So I feel tired while walking. And then I feel, should I need to go all that? Maybe there is some easier way. Maybe my teachers didn't know the easier way. There must be some way by which I can just go downhill, smooth, and reach the goal. These scriptures were, earlier they didn't have any such great vehicles that modern times we have discovered. So they might be talking about something and therefore, it looks all very unnatural. Again, that is another thing, this looks unnatural. Argument that sounds very sweet to our ears. Well, Mother Nature does everything so well. Mother Nature tells us that, well, these are all objects of enjoyment, and your senses are made for that. And so it is just natural for us to do this, to run after those enjoyments. That is the natural course. Who told you to reverse it? That is going against the nature. So we have some like that today. It comes handy whenever anything that supports our weakness, we like it. Wow. And that is the real advice. I should follow such advice. Because it just pampers our weakness. Like anybody that tells me that yes, eating ice cream is good for you, I say, yeah, that is the man who tells the correct advice to you. Whoever told us that you should not eat too much sugars and all that, the fellow didn't know. Now, why God created otherwise this urge for sugar in human beings? Since God created the urge for sugar and the sugar also, and the best thing which one has is what? It is not to eat the sugar. Any advice against that is unnatural, not right. So when I have been told by somebody that don't eat that, it is not good for you, and you are becoming fatter and fatter, that's not good for your health. Then I pause a moment. What does that man know? Then I try to find the arguments that support my weakness. Because I do not want to change this terrible energetic tendency, they grab me and tell, no, that's scriptures, you know, they were wrong. And you should take the right statements from scriptures. So I take only that which is convenient to my weakness. I take only that part, leave aside the rest. If somebody says something, I immediately have some quotes, you know, from scriptures to her like that and that. So being natural. But look, all human progress is really a struggle against nature. Nature doesn't tell us to build house. Nature doesn't clothe us. Nature doesn't house us. Build house fighting against nature. It is, remember, every progress that human being makes, every step of evolution is a fight against nature. Even to be a good human being, remember, all the natural propensities do not tell us to be moral and ethical and all that. The gene is selfish. Dawkins' book is there, you know, that selfish gene. Dawkins was a biologist, and he says that the gene, basically gene is selfish. So our nature is to be selfish. But we have to fight against that. That is what the ethics tells, that although genetically by nature you are selfish, you want to grab things for yourself, you don't care whether others get or not, but you have to, you know, that is not right, that constricts you, makes you more and more narrow-minded, it imprisons you within your narrowness. You have therefore to fight against it. Be nobler, be magnanimous, be a giving person rather than a snatching person. So this is fight against nature. So therefore, here too, we have to fight against our lower nature every time, so that the higher nature will manifest. Our true nature is different than this apparent nature. Our true nature is all-pervading. In our true nature, we are not limited by this body and these senses. And therefore, if we want to follow nature, why not follow the true nature rather than this apparent nature? So, therefore, this is a very important statement that Lord has made here, that how you should go about. The 41st verse says that you get sannyasa karma ज्ञानसं चिन्नसंशयम् आत्मवन्तं न कर्माणि निबध्नन्ति धनञ्जय. But he who has renounced the fruit of action through yoga, whose doubts have been destroyed by knowledge, and who is self-possessed, O Dhananjaya, that is Arjuna, is not bound by actions. That this has a reference, bound by actions. That all other actions, every person does actions, and those actions become a bondage in the sense that they bring their results, which again propel you into further actions, and this cycle has no end at all. It is you go on doing, thinking, you know, that well, this will be over and I will be at peace. Well, let me have take care of my children, let them be old enough, and then I would have finished my duties, I will be then perfectly at peace. No, but if the actions have been performed with desires, with attachment, then they breed their results. Then the worries about the children to get transferred to worries about grandchildren, and go on, you know, that has no end at all. What will happen to this? Many people, they do not seem to have any concerns about their grandchildren or children, but they have concern about their other possessions. Like, what will happen to all the books that I have after I die? What will happen to all these nice things that I have collected? And you keep on worrying about it. And that becomes then the cause for the next birth. Even though you may give up the body will fall, but the bondage will not go away. That bondage will force you to take another body and keep on doing the same thing. And the bondage does not go away like this. But if you reverse the cycle by working in the fashion of yoga, that has been already described, the working as sacrifice, that nothing is mine in the world. Everything belongs to Lord if you want to put it devotionally. Otherwise, just nothing belongs to me. Through work, I am purifying myself. I don't seek any results or any gains from it. But let me just purify myself. That is the yoga way of working. That work with a detached sense. That Lord is getting all work done through this machine. Who am I? That very important thing in work, when we interact with each other, we shall be feel, well, I am doing a favor to that person, or that person is doing something bad to me. Then we feel that person must be obliged to me, or I feel that person has hurt me, and that keeps on building on us. A person works in a detached way, never thinks like that. That whatever was to come to me, would come to me anyway. No person is responsible for that. It is my responsibility. Some person may serve as a mailman. Like a mailman comes and brings the mail. The mailman has nothing to do with it. It is his job in doing whether you have a pleasant letter telling that, well, you have won a lottery and you will be getting $1 million. That a mailman is not to be thankful that, yeah, wow, you are giving me $1 million. Mailman is not giving, you won it. And even when a notice comes that you have to pay so much of fine for this thing, and you get these summons for such things, mailman has nothing to do with it either. So similarly, if you happen to be an instrument in somebody's welfare, somebody got some benefit from you, you were a mailman. And you didn't do anything, and that person was to get it, you became a mailman. And if you had not done, suppose one mailman is on leave, and somebody else is appointed to put that. If a mailman retires, doesn't mean that the mail will not be done. I had gone in India to a police station to get some work done. And then that man on the station said that, well, I'm sorry, that man who was to do your work, his father passed away last night, and so he is not coming today. So I don't know now when he will be back, and because the keys are with him. So I thought now what to do, so I was going back. So and at that time, just I happened to meet by chance the superintendent there. So he just asked, so okay, you were done. I said, no, this is what has happened, so now... Then he called other people and said, well, it is true that that man's father passed away, so he can't come. But does it mean that the police station will remain closed? And then the duplicate case, not only this man's case, there may be some other cases that are to be taken care of. Get the duplicate keys and let the work be done. So that is how, you know, if one person is whatever I was to get, I would get. Whether this person does or that person does, it depends. And if I am not to get, again the same thing, whether this person is there or not doesn't make difference. So let us feel this sense of disappointment that we have not done favor to anyone. And nor has anyone hurt me in any way. I was to get pain that was written on my forehead, as you say in India. That was written on my forehead. I will get it. I will get it, if not by this mailman, by some other mailman. I have to get it. And if somebody else was to get some favor, that fellow deserves it. If I don't, so somebody else is going to do it. There's no credit to me for that. If I do, then I have this opportunity to purify myself by doing unselfish work. Unselfish work, detached work, has this tremendous potential. It becomes yoga. It purifies. That's it is like a soap, you know. If you have a soap, then the purpose of soap, if you have to know the purpose of soap, the soap is there. If you do not know the purpose of the soap, it is for washing, cleaning, it cleans you. And you think that, well, this looks a nice cake and start eating, it will be terrible, you see. It is not meant for eating. It will be terribly nauseating, it will affect the internal system. It is not meant for that. So karma is given to us. Lord is teaching us how to use it. It is meant for purification. There is no other purpose for karma but to purify. But since we do not know this purpose, we start eating it. And and that spoil ourselves. That I want the results of that. Okay, then go on into this bondage. More and more bondage comes through that. And therefore Lord says that if yoga sannyasa, that give up all attachment to the work, do work without attachment. And that is a great secret throughout Bhagavad Gita. You will see it repeated again and again with a different context. So, and with knowledge, I just doubt whether this will take me to the goal or not, whether I will get stuck in the middle or not, or maybe I am not understanding this Lord's advice at all. Get rid of all these doubts and with unflinching resolve one has to proceed on this path. That is the only way that the works will not be a bondage for us. Otherwise, every action will create a corresponding bondage, and then that chain goes on. There is no end to it unless we do this yoga way. That is the only way to transcend the actions. So, Lord says in the next and the last verse of this chapter, tasmāda jñāna sambhūtam riṣṭhaṁ jñānātinātmanā chidvainam saṁśayam yogam ātiṣṭo tiṣṭhabhārataro. So he ends the chapter, Lord ends the chapter on a note of providing great inspiration, an appeal that yes, come on, stand up. Therefore, O descendant of Bharata, and that is also a very significant as a way of addressing Arjuna, that you are the descendant of this great lineage from Bharata. They were all great, adventurous, determined kings. So don't be a namby-pamby weakling. Be determined and follow the path as your earlier forefathers had done. Oh, descendant of Bharata, destroying his doubt, born of ignorance of the self and seated in the heart, with the sword of knowledge, take to yoga and arise. That destroy his doubt by this sword of knowledge. That jnana asina, this sword, asi means sword. This sword of knowledge is to be used to destroy this doubt. It is told because the doubt comes again and again. At one point you read some very inspiring passage from Swami Vivekananda and then it appears that, that is the truth. All doubt seems to have gone. Next day again you search for doubt. Maybe Swami Vivekananda has told it for that other person, not for me or some such. So, and therefore one has to see his doubt is to be destroyed by using this world of knowledge. Remember at that time, was not I properly convinced at that time? Was my logic sleeping at that time? No, it was all very correct. Now, this doubt, this enemy is trying to get foothold again. So I must destroy it. And you, Ātiṣṭo Uttiṣṭo Bhārata, says that, come on, wake up. Don't waste time. Do don't waste the precious moment of this human birth. It is meant for the annihilation of this earth. You have all the means. Now, join them together. And this is just a matter of pushing aside this inertia. Push away this inertia. Okay, maybe next year I will see. That is not the spirit of a yogi. Now, as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, now I will begin, then only things happen. Later on, things do not, then that means you don't want to go at all. So, one has to take up the cudgel and start working in this direction. And then this is how the fourth chapter, it is Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Upanishadu Brahma Vidyayam, Yoga Shastre, Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yoga Nama Chaturtho Adhyaya. This chapter is in Bhagavad Gita. It is Bhagavad Gita, as we have discussed many times, Brahma Vidya Yoga Shastra, the theory as well as the practice, and they both are combined there. Pure science and the applied science, both are combined, Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. And in this chapter is Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yoga. By knowledge, renunciation of all action through knowledge, that is the beautiful name of this chapter. Now, while Lord was telling this, Arjuna was getting it out. In fact, that is why Lord had told all these things. But now, therefore, Arjuna is not just harboring the doubt. He asked this question to Krishna, with which the fifth chapter begins. You know, the habits don't go very easily. You feel the right thing because of these tendencies of attachment and all, and they do not go easily. One has to, those doubts again come. That, well, I was right, what Lord you are telling, I understand. But then again a question comes. Arjuna, as we see right in the beginning, was wanting to run away from the battle, didn't want to fight, didn't want to do the duty, whatever was his duty, and wanted to take the life of total renunciation. Now, Arjuna still is coming back to that position. That I understand Lord Krishna, but that what you are meaning is that I should give up everything, is it not? Then why should I be getting into this fighting and all this? I don't understand exactly what you want. And tell properly one thing, it is you are sometimes praising this, sometimes praising that. So the fifth chapter begins with that situation. It has a little apparent superficial similarity with his question in the beginning of the third chapter. But here in the fifth chapter now the context has become different. We shall discuss those things by the grace of God next Friday. Any questions? Yes.
George Lakoff, the liberal philosopher, points out that there are two approaches. In fact, he says they divide liberals from conservatives. And one is the nurturing parent, which is more likely to be the mother, and the other is the strict father, and the disciplinary approach. And he says that works in both the family and society as a whole, that you have the nurturing approach and the disciplinary approach. And he recommends the nurturing of a person because that brings out the best in people. So in the spiritual life, which is better? When do you use the nurturing approach and when do you use the strict disciplinary approach?
Well, actually I do not fully agree with this division. The proper nurturing requires discipline. Nurturing is not pampering. That is, the two things are different. And nurturing is different than pampering. See, if you want to nurture the plant, you need discipline for that. The plant needs to be also disciplined. If it is getting leaves in a very funny way, you have to do the pruning also. You have to do for the proper fruits, you have to do the pruning actually. So nurturing itself requires a disciplinarian approach. So, I don't think that this division is right, so that there is nurture. What can be understood from that is that the approach without love is not right one. That is okay to understand it that way. That there is the approach of love, exactly. But that love is not blindness. Love is based like I know many mothers who are like very good disciplinarians. Not they don't pamper the kids. They say, okay, you take it. They take care of the children, but they are very strict in their discipline. So sometimes more than others. So what I mean is that it is not nurturing is opposite to being disciplinarian. You have to discipline for nurturing. Otherwise it will not be nurturing at all. Yes, Prithi?
Yes, Prithi. Yajna is used here in this chapter. Yajna?
Yes.
Is that same as Obhasana or practice? Yajna is kind of technical, even throwback, not easier to understand.
That is why he has taken up three chapters describing this idea of Yajna. Third, fourth, and we will see it in fifth also. Practice is, we have to say the practice of sacrifice. And sacrifice is an important idea there. That you have to give up the lower level to ascend to the higher level. It is, otherwise, if you don't give up, you will be practicing remaining at the same level. So that psychological ascendance is what is signified by yajna, that you have to keep on marching ahead. And marching ahead necessarily means that you give up your present position. When you are, going to some place, that going means now you are not at this place. If you decide I will not move from this place, then you don't go to the next stage. So that spirit of renunciation and spirit of giving up, that is signified in this great word yajna. Yajna is a very special word, and we have to therefore understand this word and use it, that yes, yajna, because practice is can be of anything. So spiritual practice has to be understood in the sense of giving up. That is why the religion, actually, if you want to be that serious religion, melts down to renunciation, tyaga. Why so? Tyaga doesn't mean any negative idea. It is the most positive idea that if you want to know the truth, so you have to give up the dumbness or the ignorance. Now, whatever you are sticking to because of ignorance, that needs to be given up. And that connotation is in this word, yajna. Yes, Srikant?
It comes really in the heart of life.
Yes. Yeah, that is very important. Good question. That with some, there is this doubt dwelling. It is deep within you. It is not something very superficial. That is why it is told that it is in your mind. It is deep hidden in your mind. That is why you have to take up this board of knowledge to get rid of it. And another reason to tell it is that it is not that somebody else is planting it in you. It is not that the doubt is coming because some friend is telling you these things, or this doubt is within that ignorance that is in your heart. So that is why it is to be, it is the position has been told, that Ristham, it is within the, it is you yourself that have this ignorance, deep-rooted ignorance, like deep-rooted doubt. So deep is, therefore it doesn't go very easily. And deep-rooted, like the deep-rooted chronic problems of health, you have, suppose, like I have got some arthritis. So for a little while it is okay, as long as I keep it in check, it is fine. But if I neglect it, then it comes up and I start getting pain. So it is this doubt is also deep-rooted doubt, and therefore one has to take very special effort to root it out. So let us conclude.